Welcome to The Rink, your source for hockey talk without the entitlement. I'm James Tape Blake Graylian. After day one of the Colorado Avalanche training camp, I got together with five other hockey fans, and we talked about hockey, the internet, more hockey, and of course, the Colorado Avalanche. Enjoy, it was a really good time. Welcome to The Rink. So this is kind of the first roundtable I've ever done, and this is the first setup like this that I've ever done. So we're going to see how it works. I don't know if it's going to be perfect, if it's going to really go to heck, but a bit of a roundtable here. So got five people here to talk about the Avalanche and others. So let me just go around the room real fast. Angelique C. Murray writes for Colorado Avalanche Prospects, ColoradoAvalancheProspects.com.
Yeah,
right. blogspot.com. Oh, sorry. Without the blogspot?
No,
with the blogspot. Got to get her away from that eventually. Also talks about Avalanche prospects for Mile High Hockey and writes for Chicks Who Give a Puck, an all-female blog. And on Twitter, Jory5280.
Correct.
5280 because it's
Mile High City.
Thank you. sitting next to her, Jonathan Gebhardt. How you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you. Writing for the Burgundy blog.
Yep.
Burgundyblog.com, along with Ryan Bolding.
Hello. Hello.
Hi. Also writing for the Burgundy blog. You can find him on Twitter at Burgundy blog, at Burgundy blog. And is also the web correspondent for the fourth period for the Avs.
Congrats on that.
Excellent. Very nice.
Very cool.
Justin Goldman, who's been on the show a couple times in the tweetcasts for the Avs Guild and Hockey Guild. You can find him at the Avs Guild and at the Goalie Guild or just Goalie Guild?
The Goalie Guild.
The Goalie Guild. Is also on Mile High Sports Radio. Awesome. Glad you're here.
Thanks for having me.
Actually, get to talk to you face-to-face rather
than... Yeah, I know. Funny. Seriously. Huh?
And the host of the evening... JQ Colorado, James Kyle, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Excellent. You've been on the tweetcast a couple of times. A
couple times, yeah.
If I remember when you were before, you were not a huge fan of Stastny at the time. Or no, not of Stastny, of Volsky.
It's all about Volsky.
Yeah, he's and he's out of here, so no problem there anymore, huh?
And things are, you know,
smoothing out a little bit. Awesome. So we just finished up with day one of training camp. And in fact, I even left my training camp roster outside, so I'm going to have to borrow Angelique's.
Have two.
You have two of them? Oh,
that's how
awesome.
Prepared I am.
Wow, you are more prepared than I am. I just bring a bunch of microphones, sit down, and go, hey, take it, guys. So we might as well just kind of start around the table, Angelique. Like, was there one standout person that you were kind of surprised, or did you see anybody that really made your day out there?
Well, I missed the first 2 days of rookie camp, so it was a chance to see everybody. And I really, Ryan Stoa caught my attention, considering last year he looked sluggish, slow, and I was a constant complaint about him all of last year. And I thought he just looked so much faster. That really stood out to me. I think he, above anybody else, really stood out.
Yeah. Okay, cool. How about you? Sorry, how about you, Jonathan? Because you can't see who I'm talking to, who I'm pointing to, because this is audio. What am I doing?
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to attend the rookie camp either, you know, so it's my first time seeing a lot of these guys. But I think the person I was most impressed with was Jonas Holos.
Oh, yeah.
He played pretty well. He made some pretty smart plays. A few other people kind of stood out. I got to look at my cheat sheet here.
That's okay.
And then find
there were a lot of, because there were a lot of numbers out there that you're kind of looking at there going, wait a minute, who is that? Who is that?
Players changing numbers was really confusing.
Yes. Yeah, especially like David Jones, when I saw him, you know, I look at number 54 out there and I'm like, wait, who is that again? Because how much did he play last year? Yeah. Like three or four games, something like that before he got hurt? So.
I did the same thing. I was like 54. Look down. Oh, that's embarrassing.
Oh, yeah.
No, what threw me off was Comiskey. I, for some reason, in my head still had him at number 48.
Right.
And that's Comiskey. And no, it wasn't. Didn't even see him at all there today.
Which is very strange.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I hadn't even thought.
Yes, he went to his college number 18.
Okay, yeah.
What was he last year? 58?
59, right? Okay. Good, so I'm not crazy.
No.
Nope. I wasn't sure there. But I was also impressed by Greg Maldin.
Yes. Mm.
He played really well. So we'll see what he does.
Awesome, yeah. Ryan, anybody that stood out to you?
I'm going
to
agree. Greg Maldin probably made the biggest impression on me out of the newbies. coming up here. Also, Mike Carmen, he played pretty well. He had a couple of points, I think, at least a goal.
Yeah.
And Travis Garlitz. we'll have to find out how to pronounce that one.
Angelique, do you know?
No, I don't.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
Sorry.
Travis G.
Travis G.
He played some good defense. He stopped Zach Cohen on a one-on-one, and mm-hmm. I was pretty happy with his play. So.
Cool. Justin, I know who you're going to go for. A goal.
Well, I'll start with a forward. I mean, obviously, Greg Maldon, very impressive. Mm-hmm. Loved his stride, loved his ability to get up and down the ice, and you know, quick release, too, so that was pretty impressive. And I know he's kind of been a journeyman for the last four or five seasons, but it'll be interesting to see. I mean, the Avs have so many centers as it is, but you know, I think he'll make an impression in the AHL, and I think mm-hmm. he's a good fit in this organization because of his speed. And obviously, Daniel Winnick, I'm just a big fan of Winnick because of what he brings to the team and a void that he fills. And, you know, he's not the most skilled guy out there. He's not going to impress you with his skating or his passing, but he digs in the corners and he's physical and he's willing to go to the high traffic areas. Mm-hmm. And that's just something the Avalanche have to fill this season. So I'm excited for Winnick. I saw him during the quote-unquote rookie camp working with Anderson afterwards. So he looks like a guy who will put in the work ethic that's needed to get some minutes. And then I got to throw a goalie out there. I have not been a fan of Trevor Kahn for the last three seasons, but I have to say he definitely is the most improved goaltender in this system over the last season. And I think his time spent in Tulsa with the Oilers really helped him. So I was very impressed with Trevor Kahn.
Cool. James, how about you?
I kind of take a different approach. I mean, you guys are all very much more professional than I am. So I'm looking at last year's players. I felt that, like, Stewart, especially Brandon Yep, looked much more physical, bigger. Duchesne as well. Ryan O'Reilly, a little bit bigger. But that I was looking more for a conditioning sense because I don't know. I think we've got a limited number of spots that we're going to fill, even with all these players that looked good today. Daniel Winnick, Winnick could look good as well, Hischen, but I don't know where they're going to fit in. But I felt that the guys looked big. They looked a little bit more physical. Stastny looked all right.
Stastny looked okay. He floated a little, but then again, it's first day of training camp, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's kind of the thing with training camp. It's like you're looking at guys and you're thinking to yourself, well, why isn't, you know, Stastny really, you know, jamming for it right now? You know, you see all these other guys do it. Well, he's not working for a gig.
Right.
So that makes it a little bit different for somebody like him. But yeah, he was putting the puck near the net, on the net sometimes, I mean, Scott Hannon even got one on the net.
Yeah. He got one after it was tipped.
It was after it was tipped, but it was going towards the net, which was really impressive for him. Mm-hmm. Scott Hannon is he just the master of the no look pass? Is that his whole deal? Just looking over here and going, and it's like, wow, okay, didn't see that coming.
Yeah. Well, the whole dynamic of a 2-day camp, I mean, it changes everything.
Yeah.
You know, 3-day camp, it's a little bit different, but
well, and also look at what we saw. You know, we saw three rotating teams, and they each played three games, and who had the easiest schedule? Basically, the gray guys, because they played a game, had the whole next game off, and then played a game, and the other guys are all, you know,
that's
two games in a row.
Different.
So yeah,
last year they did two games for each day,
right?
Where the three, I've never seen them do three.
Yeah,
that's different.
Well, it was pretty packed too.
It was very compared to last year. It was packed this year.
I'd have to say. I mean, this is my sixth training camp, and I've never seen that many fans.
Yeah,
for a Saturday even. I mean, I know usually camp starts on Friday, so you're not going to see anyone in the morning, but. Mm. I mean, both stands were packed. The fans were there. They were, I mean,
they came to watch.
Saved by Craig Anderson, you know, who was it? Not Peter McNabb, Mike Haynes, you know, in the score box.
And yeah.
The first time Anderson made a save, I mean, it got loud. It got rowdy in there. So it was exciting to see.
It was more rowdy at times than, you know, regular Avs games.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Avs games are like
cheese.
Well, they're like cheese and wine parties sometimes, you know, and especially if the Avs are down, it's like, okay, we're just going to watch the game now and not really cheer that much. Like, oh, come on, guys, you know, go to a minor league game, see what it's like.
That's why I love the DU games, sitting right next to the student section. So much fun.
Oh, yeah.
They get into college games. They get into it.
Student section gets ready.
I think it's really starting to turn slowly but surely. You know, and it's the summer was a long off season for everyone, it seems like. I mean, for Avs fans especially, mm-hmm. getting a chance to see Matt Duchene for a year and getting to see Ryan O'Reilly and then having that whole summer just anticipation building to see these guys play for a second season. So I think the Avs contingency did a great job coming out full force this morning.
I'm going to surprise somebody. Ryan. If you've heard that typing on the computer, that's been Ryan. The time he's kind of, I'm assuming you're doing a blog post. Was there anybody that you felt was a dog out there at all?
Today?
Anybody killing you out there?
I mean, in general, in life, it's David Krejci. You know, I thought overall it was mostly positive. I wasn't really thrilled with some of the goaltending that I saw from, John Graham, I think, is probably going to be the dog of the podcast for the goalie. Pickard Justin's did pretty well, but he didn't seem too comfortable or kind of anxious even. It looked like he almost fell on one of the goals that the team scored against him. He kind of, did this quick snap with his body like he was going down, and he didn't. But I would say it's probably them out of most people, and it is day one, so we'll have to wait and see what happens tomorrow.
Jonathan, you?
Krejci and I can't remember who it was now. Whoever it was that fell down and just gave that empty net goal to Hajduk.
Oh, Troy Rutkowski. You can add him to my list. Poor guy.
He struggled.
He didn't look good on defense. And I will add to that David Lifton.
Oh.
David. I wasn't really thrilled with him. He was paired with Shattenkirk for a while. And
Shattenkirk was getting double shifted a lot out there, though. It was him and Hannon. Yeah. And then, but actually, one of the people that when Shattenkirk was out there, what I saw a lot was Shattenkirk going down low. And you'd see Philippe Dupuis come back and cover. Mm-hmm. And he had a goal out there, too, a pretty nice goal as well. But he was, to me, he seemed to have some pretty good vision out there. Yeah. He was really being able to keep track of where everybody was, when he should come back and cover, when he can get back into the play. It was I was kind of impressed with him.
I agree with you there. Yeah. I think, being in your second camp, or it's not a second camp, but just the fact that he's been through this last season and a lot of these younger guys have not, especially the guys that are on tryouts, he had good situational awareness. And I think, that's a big battle right there. That seventh defenseman, I know, Zach, you were telling me about that someone's going to win that job, whether it's Shattenkirk or Cohen, or maybe it is Dupuis. So it's going to be interesting to see. And that's probably why we saw Shattenkirk, getting those extra shifts.
Yeah. Angelique, how about you? Anybody your dog of the day?
Wow. I probably would agree with Rutkowski. And I actually like that selection when they drafted him. But I wouldn't say I'm too down because first training camp.
Yeah.
So I think you're expecting some of those guys to struggle. Just like we see how talented Calvin Pickard is, but he struggled. He gave up some bad goals, but that's all adjusting to the speed of the game. So I'm not really down on anyone. And as mentioned, first day, like to give it a little, at least tomorrow and some of the preseason games to really make more definitive opinions about some of these guys.
Now, Pickard's first goal, in the last game, was 20 seconds after he got back on the ice, so it wasn't like he was warmed up. Just throwing that out there.
Not being a hater today.
Not being a hater. James?
Again, I kind of take it from a different approach, and I talk about the players that I recognize from last season. I'd probably say that David Jones was one of them. It's not that I was disappointed with him, but we've had those Svatos and the Tangays and the Wolskis. Goddamn Wolskis. and I just I want to put him at that level higher than what he's playing at.
Yeah.
And it's the first day of camp, so what do you throw it under the bus anyway? But he's one guy that I'd really like to see come out, use his speed well, attack the puck, and set other guys up. I think he's really going to confuse some people if he's really 100%.
Yeah.
But he blew out his knee last year, so.
Yeah he didn't seem like he was really skating.
So,
hard,
he's got all the scapegoats in the world, and I'm going to give it to him. But I think he's one guy that I'd really like to see come out and play.
Yeah.
An A-plus game every time.
I'm throwing Adam Foote under the bus myself for a moment. Just very first shift of his, and he slew Foote's a guy, and it's the hockey season has started. It's we have an Adam Foote slew Foote, and I love Adam Foote, but he's obviously lost a step. He's obviously slowing down a little bit, and the unfortunate part is that he tends to then start taking penalties and bad penalties when somebody's like, there was, I think it was it a playoff game? I think it was where, from last season where, somebody was about to blow by him and he just stuck his leg straight out and tripped the guy. He was like inches from knee on knee. And again, I love Adam Foote. I love what he's done for the team. And I think he's a good captain for the time right now while we have a young team. But at the same time, wow, that's, you know, there was another time when he just took a guy out completely from behind the net. I guess it was a little back and forth from them anyways. And
Bournival.
He just, I guess there was a little back and forth previously, but wow, it's almost interesting in these, you know, to see that these guys aren't really like, how it's like they're still playing hockey out there, even though, hey, that's your teammate over there, but I still got to finish my check on this guy.
Right.
I'm going to get the elbow in there a little bit, Cody McLeod, and get the elbow up a little bit. And you're like, hey, that's our guy. We need that guy. Right. Oh, well, never mind.
Well, it's an interesting mix. I mean, you've got guys that are seriously battling, not just for a chance to make the Avalanche squad, but this is positioning for Lake Erie as well.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, there were more coaches and scouts over there sitting on the left side than I noticed from last season. I mean, we even had guys from Lake Erie covering the training camp. So I was very impressed with the intensity. I mean, that first game was very physical. And usually it takes a game or it takes a few hours for that pace to really speed up. But as soon as the puck dropped, I mean, it was very physical and guys were going after each other. And, you know, there wasn't great flow in the first game. The second game definitely had better flow. Mm-hmm. But just the intensity, I mean, you saw some guys going after each other. And when you mix those veterans in with those rookies, it's going to happen. You're going to have guys that are a step behind. And you just have to be really situationally aware when that happens. And, you know, Adam Foote's role has definitely changed on this team. I mean, he's the wily veteran. He's our captain. He's
the tough guy in a way that's going to be out there other than Coachy, you know, when Coachy's watching the game in the from the booth.
Yeah, and it's interesting too because Foote, he gets upset. I mean, he's a very emotional guy, and that will lead to some frustrating penalties. So he's got to keep himself in check, I think, and that's going to be one thing for the coaching staff to watch is how are they going to manage his minutes, because if you give him too many minutes, he's only going to get more tired. He's going to be behind. He might take a bad penalty or two. Yeah. So, you know, that's why that seventh spot for that defenseman is a really interesting battle right now. It might be like the highlight battle for training camp.
That's
this year.
True.
Yeah, and I remember an interview shortly after Foote signed. He basically came out and said, yeah, my minutes are going to be reduced. So I think we should expect he'll be more of a third pairing defenseman this year. And that I was okay with that. I'll be honest, I didn't think they should have re-signed him. I thought it was time for him to retire. But if he's going to come back, a reduced role absolutely has to be. Has to be.
Well, poll question. James, should they have re-signed him?
I think yes, just because our team is so young. You got rid of Tucker. You got rid of Clark. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm complaining. But the thing about Tucker, I personally liked Clark. I think he was overpaid, but whatever. But Tucker was a good locker room guy. He got in there and he talked to those young kids, and we don't really have that role player anymore. So Han's going to need to, you know, pull up his panties and take a different role with this team. Foote's going to have to do the same.
Hey, I think that locker, you know, I think Tucker was fine for the kids, but, you know, you can't always give the kids what they want. I want a jungle gym in my backyard, but I don't have room for it.
Well, so, I think that's why Budai's back, not because he's a solid backup. He's okay. He's all right, but he's a good locker room guy. Yeah, I think he's really good for Anderson, and what's good for Andy is good for me. Yeah. So
let's talk a little bit of about Budai in a moment, because I'm curious about people's feelings about him. Ryan, should they have re-signed Foote?
I think they should. Again, we go back to the veteran presence, what he brings to the team. To touch on the physicality of him today at training camp, I think, you know, being the captain, players trying to make the team have to prove themselves to him also. So if, you know, he roughs them up and they can take it and he knows what they're made of, I think that helps their cause a bit, because I'm sure he'll have some sort of say in how these players mesh or don't mesh with the team. But I do think he's lost a step or two before. And what I love about him is that, you know, I was saying this earlier, nobody wants to go into a corner with Adam Foote.
Yeah.
He's ruthless and he's gritty, and we need that in front of the net. So even if he's got reduced minutes or if he's slowing down, he's still a strong presence in front of the net, and that's where he's spent most of his career. So I think it was a good idea. It'll probably be his last year. But
I didn't really see anybody that was really soft in the corner, which is a nice thing to see. That is nice. No Miroslav Satans, yeah. None of that. Oh, during the Olympics, Miroslav Satan was so soft on the corner, I could have taken the puck from him. That's just, he was so bad. Jonathan, Adam Foote, yay, nay? Thumbs
yeah,
up, thumbs
yeah,
down,
no,
thumbs
I'm glad they re-signed him. I think as long as he can still play at this level, and, you know, he can, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, he's not Chelios. Like, yeah, he's got like 10 years younger than Chelios, and he was still going. So, yeah. I mean, that's an exaggeration, but.
Not really. He was what? Chelios just retired at what?
44.
And Adam Foote's 38, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's not that much of an exaggeration. Of course, Chelios has have his chili empire, Chili's Chili Bar downtown Detroit, which
we'll question,
to fall back on.
We'll question how many years of compete he has had in the
yes,
last
thank
couple
you.
Years.
Yeah, it's okay,
thank
that's
you.
True.
Yeah,
I would argue none in the last three.
Thank you very
least,
much.
But. True, but, you know, then again, he did, he got, he made the Thrashers eventually. I mean, yeah, it was when... when pretty much the writing was already on the wall and the like, yeah. But you know, to be willing to go and play in Chicago and battle for a spot somewhere, you know, that's
yeah. Well, the thing is, it's the influence that he brings to the locker room. You know, Ryan brought up the good point is he has a big say on what goes on with his team and what's going on in the locker room. And Chelios was the same way. I mean, he's a model of how you handle things in the off season. He's in the locker, you know, he's in the weight room all the time. That's the only way he can stay in shape and be able to play at the NHL level is by being very, very dedicated in the off season and to his training. And, you know, I don't know what Adam Foote's regime is like in the weight room, but you'd have to imagine that 38 years old, being able to still be in the NHL, that's a big influence on the younger kids to be able to see what it takes to have such a long, tenuous career and still be successful and be a leader. So, you know, I'm glad Adam Foote is back. I think he makes a perfect captain for this team. And, you know, with him and Hejduk, you've got Hejduk really, you know, mentoring the younger forwards. And you've got Adam Foote being that composed, big, gritty guy on the blue line. I think it's a good fit.
Cool. I want to kind of bring up the Budaj thing. I can't let you have all the conversation,
no,
Justin.
No,
I'm sorry.
No, I'm on the air now, so don't worry.
It's
about
all good.
It.
No, I'm just kidding. But Budaj, you know, you brought up Budaj, and you know that they bring him back. He's kind of the familiar thing. Last season, Budaj was kind of a bit of the dog of the team, while he had exactly the same numbers as and Justin, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, the goals against average and the save percentage were exactly the same as Anderson, and yet he was the dog of the team. So people don't seem to really care to have Budaj around. Guys, what do you think?
I think, you know, we have experienced Budaj as the starting goaltender on the team, and it's just not something that he's capable of handling as a workload. He just can't do it. He can't maintain it. And you can say he did have the same numbers as Anderson, but he also didn't play nearly as many games.
Right.
So, you know, and he's had some ups and downs. I've said
as before, did Andy last year.
Andy did too as well, yeah. And I think that comes with the territory. And Budaj is the safe play, really. You know, he can put up consistent numbers. You can sort of depend on him to be the backup when you need him to step in and fill that role. He's not the guy you would depend on to carry your team all the way, you know, to the Stanley Cup. But you've got to talk about the locker room presence and just the positive attitude he's had at having the starting job and then having that taken away from him and still maintaining, you know, a professional atmosphere. And
he looked pretty goofy, smiling, coming off the ice today. He just looked like a kid at a candy store. Yeah, how you guys
I think that's him all the time. But you hear guys in post-game interviews, you know, after shootout saying, oh, well, I went out to take the shot, and Peter called me over and told me to do this, and I went down, and that's what worked, and we won the game, you know. So he contributes in more ways than just his on-ice ability, and I think that's why we kept him. I don't know if I would have made that choice, but it is the safe play. And as
Justin shaking
this
his head, no, I imagine what you would have wanted.
Well, I'm not going to, I don't want to say much about the goaltending because I can go on and on, but Tyler Wyman was capable of being this team's backup.
Yeah.
The Avalanche had him in the system for 6 seasons. He never got more than 10 minutes worth of ice time, and he stopped every shot he saw in that game against Nashville. So, why re-sign Peter Budaj when you have an opportunity to develop the goalies in your system? That was my biggest thing. But I will say what I noticed about Budaj today, way more confident than he was the first day last season. The first day last season, he came on the ice. He was tense. He was nervous. And he looked like he was defeated before he even faced a shot. And a lot of that was Anderson's presence. But this season, I think he understands his role much, much better. He's going to be more confident. And I give Budai credit because last season was a tough situation. He didn't get any consistent minutes or starts.
Yeah.
And coming off the bench like that, when you hardly play, it's very tough to play well. And I think he did a great job. So you can expect Peter Budai to be decent this season. And, you know, every year of experience you get, you understand how to play when you're not getting a lot of minutes. So I think Budai was okay. It's just really tough to see Tyler Wyman go to Northwest Division rival Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah. And in fact, I was wearing my Tyler Wyman jersey. Yep. One of the two Tyler Wyman jerseys I have, because I really like Wyman also. But AHL hockey writer on Twitter about what he thought of Wyman, and he wrote back, "Wyman is solid. I want to see how he does with a better roster than he had in Lake Erie."
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is good, which is true. Angelique, your thoughts on the Budai, the goalie situation, quote unquote situation, since it's not much of a situation.
Well, I guess my thoughts about Budai were wondering why the head coach didn't seem to have very much trust in him.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps is that because Sacco himself is a new coach? Maybe he just felt more comfortable going, you know, giving Anderson all those games. And I think we all thought Anderson, at least to me, wore down. And so then they re-signed him, and I was thinking, why did they re-sign him when it seemed to me they didn't have enough trust in him? So that's kind of the question I had. And I'm with Justin, following Wyman in Lake Erie, I too wanted him to see, have him have a real opportunity. Never really had a real opportunity here.
No.
I think my question that you asked about Sacco was, I kind of applied that to Wyman also, as, you know, is there a reason that did Sacco see something that, you know, maybe is influencing why Wyman is not getting the shot that people feel like he's earned?
What I'll say is I have to be very careful because, you know, the Avs did a great job this summer drafting the two best goalies available in lower rounds than they should have gone.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're starting to turn, but I don't think the Avalanche understand how important it is to develop goalies from within. They're not used to it. They've had Patrick Waugh for, that's how they rolled, and that was the best thing you could possibly ask for.
And then when things faltered with Abisher, they traded for a big name goalie.
Right.
Yep. So, but big name who is also still waiting for a gig, and apparently Jose Theodore's agent has said that they're not going to do they're not going to do a tryout. It's just going to be sign him or don't.
Right.
And I think it's going to be don't.
Pretty much.
How many jobs out there?
It'll have to be a serious injury for him to get a job because...
And we see how well that worked for Manny Legacy last year.
Right.
I was just going to say. Yeah.
Exactly.
And you see what the goalies are getting paid or not getting paid.
Right.
So there's just not a very good market.
When I was at the draft this year, there were a couple of Sharks fans behind me, and they were saying how, look at the money goaltenders didn't do well and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it was all cheap goaltending, which I don't, you know, I can understand. But at the same time, then you look at the top four goalies, you know, in the playoffs, who were the four playoff goaltenders that were left? Well, three of them are now with other teams, you know, and one of them's in the KHL of those three. So, you know, it's... Well,
the thing is, everyone talks about cheap goaltending, and you know what? Every goaltender is capable of winning a Stanley Cup depending on what your situation is and how good the team in front of you is.
See, here we go. It's a goalie blaming the defense. We never hear that.
I'm just saying that a lot of goalies are very capable. They're the 30 top goaltenders in the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between Michael Layton and, say, you know, a Martin Brodeur, what is it? It's basically experience.
Right.
You know, Martin Brodeur has been in the league for 18 years, since 93. So whatever that is, 18 years. And he has been through it all. He understands how to play in any given situation. Michael Layton learned a lot in the Stanley Cup Finals. The goal that he let in by Patrick Kane, it was a terrible, terrible goal. But do you ever think he's going to allow that kind of a bad goal again? He learned his lesson, and it's a tough lesson to learn.
Pretty similar goal to what Ryan Miller let in the Olympics.
Interestingly enough, very, you know, that sharp angle goal off the wing. Yeah, I mean, you can find a good goaltender and pay him $500,000, and he can be capable of winning the Stanley Cup. Antti Niemi is a perfect example. he is not a technically sound goaltender. He's not the kind of goalie you would ever pay $5 million.
Right.
But over the course of the season, he just built up so much confidence, and he was on a very good offensive and defensive team. He made the stops he needed to make, and that's all you need. So, you know, you look at goaltenders like Craig Anderson. You know, he was a journeyman and a backup until he got his opportunity with Colorado. And I think a lot of what you were saying about why bring back Peter Budaj, well, this is Craig Anderson's team. Mm-hmm. And we talked before we started, we talked about the interview that was on Avalanche website about, you know, some of the questions like, why ask Anderson if he wants to play 70? Of course he wants to play 70 games. And, you know, everyone's wondering what is the game situation going to be between Anderson and Budaj. It's going to be the exact same as last season. Anderson's going to play every single game he possibly can,
right?
Maybe a few less on back-to-back nights. There's no Olympics this season, so
that's true.
You know, the schedule's not as condensed. And Craig Anderson, he wants to be in the net every single game. He basically deserved to be in the net every single game. And, you know, it's tough for Peter Budaj, but this is Anderson's team, and the coaching staff is going to let him play every opportunity he can play. So
let's face it, I mean, Budaj wouldn't have played as many games as he did last year if Anderson hadn't gotten hurt. So,
right.
You know. That's true, yeah. But, you know, also they would do back-to-back starts on the road.
Yeah.
You know, for Anderson, like, what the heck? And everybody's, what the heck are you doing? And you could see Anderson starting to break down a little. I mean, he was getting tired. Everybody would get tired in that situation.
And a lot of NHL players will say, and not just goalies, but they feel better on the second game of a back-to-back because they're loose and they've played the night before and they just feel better, you know, like they don't have the lactic acid buildup and for whatever reason they can just skate easier in that second game. They're a little bit lighter. And, you know, Craig Anderson, he's a workhorse. I mean, he's not the biggest guy in the world, but he plays a pretty, you know, solid style and he can handle it. So why not go with your top guy? That's what you brought him in for.
Sure. We're getting close to the season. The preseason starts Tuesday. And the Avs are still, correct me if I'm wrong, $200,000 under the cap still.
Ish.
Thereabouts.
Ish, yeah.
I don't think anybody really knows what that number is, but then.
I think because remember Dater said something before Mueller had signed that they were closer to the cap floor than what somebody like Cap Geek was reporting. So
Cap Geek does pretty well.
I do.
Capgeek.com.
Yes, great website. Great
I go with them and yeah. It's between 100,000 to 200,000.
Yeah, it's not very much.
Do you think they're going to sign anybody, or is it just bring up a guy and give him enough money to make the cap floor?
I think they're going to go within. They'll bring up somebody. So somebody out there is going to earn themselves a job.
Greg Maldon.
Maybe Greg Maldon.
Cross our fingers.
But I think it's going to be one of the young defensemen.
Well, they finally, it took them forever to sign Stuart Mueller. You know, finally, you know, I mean, this is it. I don't know what the heck the holdup was. It seems like there's, you know, you might as well just do it. What was?
I think the Avalanche were trying to wait and see how the market played out with a lot of the restricted free agents. So you had Jeff Delorier, who is a restricted free agent. He signed. And then you had a couple of guys on the Eastern Conference. I can't remember their names, but there were some restricted Sam Gagne. Sorry, that was the other one for the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah.
So I think the Avalanche, they like to do that. They like to see how the market plays out, and then they establish a certain salary amount. It's almost like arbitration, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they let the market play out, and then they see what the averages are for those guys, and then they go from there. So I was a little worried personally, but they obviously got it done. That's all that matters.
Well, the handoff of the team ownership from Stan Kroenke to his son.
Oh, boy.
I'll start with you, James. You think anything's actually going to be different, or is this just same old, same old?
You know, I'm...
Or does it really matter to you? I mean, you know, you're a season ticket holder.
Yeah.
You know,
it matters in the fact that I think that the Avalanche need to take a serious step back and think how they're marketing to the season ticket holders, to the casual fan. I mean, we were all at games last year, and we were all at those 12,000, 14,000, 16,000 games.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, as a season ticket holder, it wasn't the environment I was looking for. It was a letdown. It's hard to get. I go to games and, you know, I have one too many beers, and I get everyone around me as pumped as possible. But, it's hard to do that when there's, you know, 30 seats between you and the closest person. So
you look up there and you see two people sitting in one section. Yeah, like there's lower bowl seats. Why are you even sitting up there? You know.
And yeah, and I know that they were selling lower bowl seats for way cheaper. I mean, half price, even for playoff games. Wow. And I don't know what sort of environment is the new Kroenke going to give us, Josh. Right?
Right.
Josh Kroenke, yeah.
Is he going to do anything? Does he care? Or is he, you know...
A puppet?
Exactly.
Or, you know, is he worrying about where Melo's going to go? And I'll tell you, Melo's not going to Denver. We all know it, so why care? Care about a team that has talent, that has youth, and that's exciting, and quit paying attention to T-Ball and the Broncos, who are going to suck, and start coming and watching the Avalanche, who are going to take sixth in the Western Conference.
How long have you been a season ticket holder?
It's my boss who gives us plenty of tickets, but he's been a season ticket holder since McNichols, so I think 98.
So so you've probably seen the scale of how the pricing has gone over the years.
I mean, it hasn't. Is it the last several years? It hasn't gone anywhere. I mean,
has it been pretty flat on ticket prices?
Yeah, our tickets are $111, and we are 9 rows up from center ice. So right behind the opposing player bench, which is great, you know? You get to heckle fans all day.
Actually, just ran into a friend of mine who I hadn't seen in 20 years. My high school best friend. Jeez. Hadn't seen him in 20 years. And was surprised to find out that he's one of the guys who paints his face at the Mammoth Games. and the tickets, $25 down low.
Yes. Yep.
Like right in the
It's hard to argue with that.
It's amazing. Yeah, and then we look at how much are the upper bowl side seats are in the 50s sometimes, 60s. I mean, that seems like they're pricing themselves out. And then what's this year's marketing campaign? It's all about
All about the A, which is
I don't even know what the A is.
I don't think it's so much about the change in ownership. It's LaCroix, because Josh, just like Stan, is just going to give, here, Pierre, here are the keys to the franchise. You can do what you want.
Go have a good time.
So now maybe one thing that Kroenke might have done in terms of the budget, because he was trying to buy the St. Louis Rams, he might have said, okay, you're going to have to cut your budget in terms of what you can spend on personnel. Mm-hmm. But I think everything else, marketing, I think that's really that's LaCroix and those people under him. So I think that's where you have to look at Pierre LaCroix.
Well, we've all, the return of Pierre LaCroix pretty much last year. And pretty much also the return of a lack of information for the fans. And, you know, as fans, I mean, how do you guys feel about the Avs and basically how they communicate with the fans?
It's hard. You know, we used to have humorous commercials and, you know, championships and other things.
The little things in life, you know. I remember there was this big shiny thing they were holding over their head. I don't know what it was, but it was a lot of fun.
That big parade.
I'm sure there was a banner somewhere too, but, you know, now you're lucky to see, I mean, this year, notwithstanding, because I have seen some other media on other channels, but last year it was all in-house commercials on the in-house network. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw a billboard for the Avalanche on Colorado, at like Colorado and I-70, and I was like, wow, they're reaching out somewhere, but it's over here.
Yeah.
You know, so it's been kind of lacking. I just saw that they're doing a social media campaign for single game tickets, autographed pucks, and season tickets. And I wrote some facetious tweet about it, and I got retweeted by the Denver Post. They didn't know I was joking, but I was literally like, wow, they're using social media.
Yeah, I think they have kind of like a retweeter. Yeah,
it's
a
like
bot.
Avs
yeah.
tweet, because they retweet Avalanche
FF. And
I actually wound up blocking that on Twitter just because it was starting to get a little annoying. Yeah. I was like, you know what, forget you. I think you don't need to retweet my crap.
Well, here's what I know. I mean, and obviously you guys know I have pretty good insight with the Avalanche Guild, and but I started out as a fan, and I was very fortunate to have opportunities to help the Avalanche market to adult hockey teams. And the thing that I learned, and this is coming from Dallas, so I'm not from Colorado, and I moved out here in 2000, is they had players market the team. They had Patrick Waugh, they had Peter Forsberg, Ray Bourque, all those guys. They didn't have to really have a marketing campaign because the players did that on the ice.
Right.
When they lost all those players and the lockout came, everything was thrown in the trash.
Yeah.
And they basically had to start over from scratch. but they didn't have the personnel in the front office hired or even around to manage and create those programs. Instead, they had to go outside and come to someone like myself who just had a couple of decent ideas and build these programs, these interactive programs for adults. And I think slowly but surely you're starting to see the Avalanche understand that they have to find new and interactive ways to engage the fans. And you see it on the website. They have this new puck drop contest where they hide pucks and you find the pucks and you might win season tickets. That's, you know, that we laugh at it because it's like, why haven't you guys been doing this for 5 or 6 years? Yeah. But that's what you want to see. You want to see them to start to engage the fans.
I laugh at it partially because I almost never go to avalanche.com.
Right.
Well, I mean, what's the point? Exactly. Half the time, anybody else is going to talk about it too. And as bad a job as they've done, who wants to sit through all that animation and garbage and, you know, just to see that, you know, you're looking at stats from a year ago still. And you're like, what the heck's going on here?
Yeah. Well, I think what matters is that they're starting to get it. And, you know, doing something like this, doing a roundtable podcast, that's very important for Avalanche fans because we're starting to create a real community again. And before, that community wasn't there because everyone just wanted to come see the greatest players in the Western Conference. And we, you know, as Avalanche fans, everyone was very fortunate to have that opportunity to see some of the greatest players in the world and to see Patrick Waugh. I mean, that's how they sold the tickets.
Yeah.
And now they are kind of, you know, scratching their head, like, how do we bring that back? And it really does, I think, start with the fans. Mm-hmm. And the fans are the ones that pay the money for the tickets and find ways, even if it's not the most engaging experience, to still go and cheer for the players.
Yeah.
And so, you know, slowly but surely the Avs are starting to get it, and you see a little bit more coverage on Twitter and on radio stations, and it's exciting because we have an opportunity as fans to really come out and kind of hold up the Avalanche and really get them to engage with the fans even more.
Yeah.
And you know, a big topic over the summer was bloggers versus, you know, mainstream media. And I hate to bring it up, but I think in Colorado it's very important because when it comes to mainstream media, there's one voice. And his name's Adrian Dater. And love him or hate him, Big Red is the man when it comes to, like, getting information on the Avalanche. So there's got to be more voices. There's got to be more people that are passionate enough to start up their own blog or start up their own website and talk about the Avs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everyone here does that in a certain way. And that's what's exciting for me to see because, you know, that's fun. It's fun to interact, and that's what you need. You need to be interactive. You can't just have fans show up to the game and do the little mini mites thing during the intermission, and then that's it.
The Price is Right.
That
oh
is
my God.
The King Super thing. I mean, I'm sorry. I can't stand it. I just can't stand it.
Well, I can't bash it, though, because I won $100 on the last game of the year. So.
That's where you got that hat, right?
Yeah.
That's a $100 hat.
The hat and my groceries.
Beautiful hat.
I think one thing that really hurt is the closing of the Rocky Mountain News because you lost a voice.
Yeah.
And I preferred Rick Sadowski. I thought he was more professional, more level-headed when it came to his coverage. So when you lost that voice, that hurt big time. Yeah. So all you have is Dater. That's the guy. Mm. So he probably gets, you know, all kinds of questions and things he doesn't know. And that's kind of what we're here, because we all kind of cover some different aspect. I do prospects, you do goalies. And so, but I think that's really hurt when the Rocky Mountain News shut down.
Yeah.
And that's
It also took away competition.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, no matter what we do as podcasters, as bloggers and the like, we just don't have the reach right now. And obviously we don't have the access. And so that makes it a little difficult for us to kind of compete. But there really isn't any competition,
right,
which
that's
makes
the thing.
It hurts.
You know, the Avs are not the most flexible when it comes to bloggers and giving credentials and things like that.
Right.
But there's other ways you can cover the team. I mean, look, Jory, you're a perfect example. You cover prospects and no one else has that kind of insight or analysis on prospects. And you want to talk about developing a fan base. Well, that's where it starts, are the guys that are in Lake Erie fighting for jobs.
And I did it because there was nothing. The Avs, and now they do more. The Avs are better now with putting stories about prospects.
Right.
But when I started my blog, there was absolutely nothing. Yeah. So I took, you know, I was like, you know, what the heck? I'm going to go ahead and start my own little blog. And so I watch tons of college hockey games, AHL games, few European games if I can find them. So
DU
I watch
games
a lot.
Too.
I'm a DU season ticket holder, so I'm out there a lot. So,
Jonathan, how do you feel about the coverage that the Avs get? I mean, do you feel like it? Do you feel like you get enough from the papers at all? Do you, I mean, obviously you're a blogger also, so
yeah,
you know,
no, not
a little
at all.
Biased, but yeah. You know.
I mean, you know, we started the Burgundy blog basically because, you know, there was the Denver Post and that was it. And it was, for lack of a better word, garbage.
Well, I think that there are a few people here who would say otherwise, but go ahead. a few people have their own blogs who don't think that they're garbage, but go ahead. No, that's okay.
Well, no. I mean, you know, like other blogs and stuff. But yeah. I mean, you know, in terms of the one official voice, it was the Denver Post. And, you know, I just wasn't happy with the coverage. You know, it just wasn't what I expected from... you know, a national newspaper, basically, on, you know, the hockey team in the region.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like everybody said, they had the players to market, you know, so they didn't need marketing, anything like that. And that's, you know, they're slowly catching up.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, especially with the one voice, they need to really embrace other forms of media besides, you know, just a newspaper, you know, blogs, whatever, fan clubs. I mean, whatever it is, mm-hmm. the more people you can attract, the more people that you can, you know, say, hey, come check this out, then the better.
Yeah, they're very 20th century. We need to pull them into the 21st century.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is we need to be the ones that pull them in, because they can't, it's not that they're ignoring us on purpose. They're just not used to handling, you know, the secondary media or whatever you want to call it. It's just a matter of being open to new ideas. Yeah. And another example is a guy like Aaron from the Avalangelist. You know, like, he had these really cool ideas to do, like, theme songs for every player when they score. And, you know, he came to me for advice. He's like, you've been through this. How do I get into the ear of the Avalanche? And I said, it's really hard, but you just have to be as professional as possible and send in a letter and just give them your ideas. You know, they may not respond, they may not listen, but the more that they get those things and the more that they see that the fans are trying to get these cool, interactive, new ideas going, they're going to listen sooner or later.
Yeah.
And it really just comes down to being opportunistic. Like 90% of the stuff they don't listen to, but I'm an example. They listened to me. They liked my ideas. And, you know, I'm very fortunate that that happened, but everyone else in this room has amazing ideas. You just have to be lucky and you have to be a little persistent. That's all. And so the more that we get together and the more that we do these kind of podcasts, you know, and there's season ticket holders here that voice their opinion, the Avalanche are going to hear this,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe not the right people, maybe not right away, but the Avs are going to start to listen. The Avs fans are going to start to understand that there is this really hardcore base of very passionate fans that want to see the Avalanche be like the other teams in the NHL. Yep. I mean, go to Carolina and look at what the Hurricanes do. They have these awesome fan festivals where thousands of fans come out and walk around and there's vendors and, you know, the space is being utilized efficiently and they're selling season tickets. The Avalanche should be doing all of that stuff, but the reason they don't is because they've never done it before. And so all it takes is one time, one opportunity, one event, and it will change everything and it will be a domino effect.
Yeah.
And that could happen at any given moment. I mean, the Burgundy White game is a good example, kind of like it's interactive and it's the, you know, the two sides playing against each other and they hold them at different rinks, but there just has to be more and it has to come from guys like us to really force those ideas down their throat until they finally listen and they finally do it.
Yeah. I think they have to understand that they lost a lot of people after the lockout.
The lockout.
I know people who only go to DU hockey. They refuse to go to Avs games because of the lockout. And I think maybe they're slowly starting to see that now. But at the time, it was just totally over their head. They didn't see it.
And to give the Avs some credit, it's not easy. I mean, they have a budget to work with.
Sure.
And they do a lot of really cool programs. Most of it is youth-oriented. Like, for example, last season, and probably 90% of Avalanche fans don't know this, but they have this program called Caja Cares. And Caja, for you guys that don't know, is Colorado Amateur Hockey Association. So they govern all of the youth and amateur hockey in Colorado. And the Avalanche put this great program together where they took all of the competitive youth hockey leagues and teams in Colorado and held all the finals and the championship games at Pepsi Center. So you had like maybe 500 youth hockey players holding their championship hockey game on Pepsi Center ice. that's an amazing experience. That's an amazing program.
But like you said, how many people actually know about it?
Exactly.
And that's the thing.
They need to get the word out.
Exactly. Yep. And so it's not easy. I mean, you can only do so much in a season. And they do some great programs. Like they have the Quebec Qualifier Tournament. Yes. And that's an amazing program. I mean, that Quebec tournament is the most prestigious.
It's huge up there in Quebec.
Yeah, it's huge. You know about that because you have family up there. Yep. It's the biggest youth, you know, peewee tournament in the entire world. And the Avalanche have a team. And, you know, the kids that represent Colorado Avalanche, they get Avalanche jackets and they wear Avalanche jerseys. And that's like a life-changing experience for that youth hockey team. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the fans want to see more of that and they want to be exposed to those programs. Because, like I said, 90% of the fans don't even know they really exist.
Well, James, you you and I met because of you as a listener of the podcast, right? I mean, you on a tweet cast,
So you
pay attention a lot to the other media out there. I know you listen to the Avs Hockey Podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually gotten to know, not personally, but I've followed. Just because I met at Vote for Grant, and then, you know, and that snowballed, and now I'm at, you know, I'm following 300 people, and six people are following me.
One of the six.
If I'm not, I will be.
I think we're friends on Facebook.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, how is it with you and the? I mean, how do you feel about the coverage and the like? I mean, you've had to go, like the people, the rest of us, we've all started blogs and stuff like that. Yeah. So we're kind of, you know, invested in or whatnot, or, you know, bloggers reading bloggers and stuff like that is great and all. But, you know, you're a season ticket holder, you're a fan, you know, you've been on the podcast a couple times, but, you know, without your own outlet, how do you feel about it?
Well, I mean, for me, I feel like I know the sport. But I need to know more. So that's why I'm following bloggers. I'm listening to podcasts. I'm reading, you know, Adrian Dater and Bob McKenzie. And as much as I can soak up. Mm-hmm. And I've written about hockey a little bit, and I had a blog, and it was terrible, so I quit doing
Which blog did you
have? I'm not even going to mention
Okay.
it. But, I mean, it's something – I mean, I've tried to do that. And you guys talk about your struggles and getting yourself out there, and it's really hard. I don't know. I just want things to change and not go back the way they were. We're never going to have that heyday of Sakic and Forsberg. Yeah. And it's not going to happen, people. It's not. Elway's not coming back. You know,
he'll sell you a car, but he ain't going to play.
It's just not going to happen.
He doesn't even sell cars. Yeah.
So until we like take the future and grab hold and say, yeah, we don't have Sakic, we don't have Forsberg, we don't have Watt, but we have O'Reilly and we have Duchesne and we have Kaminsky, and, you know, like, we've got these players, and I think that they could be exciting, and I think that they could be exciting for the casual fan, the serious fan, if they were brought out. I mean, look at Tebow. He played college football and won a Heisman Trophy, and yeah, he was a decent college football player, and he got here, and it's like pandemonium. Yeah. You can't turn on the radio or open the newspaper or answer the phone without somebody saying Tebow, Tebow, Tebow. Like here on a hockey podcast, I'm talking about Tebow.
Yeah, that's all right.
And that's the point. Like it needs to be. We have that opportunity, and until it's grasped by the organization, then people like you guys need to keep putting your message out there. So. People like me can learn a little bit more.
Oh, you've got a message.
I have no
message.
Buy a nice jersey. That's my message, damn it. Buy good jerseys.
I have to buy another Avs jersey, so there.
You need to buy a Lake Erie jersey.
Yes, I do. I need and I want to get another DU jersey, so there.
Well, I mean, look at you, though. You travel 300 days out of the year.
And I, yeah.
You're here for training camp, so the passion is there. You have amazing equipment for this to happen.
Listen, just because I had a little bit of money to spend on it, and I was, you know, went a little hog wild.
Well, that's the thing is there's so many passionate Avalanche fans in Colorado, and I'm from Texas, so I understand, like, I can see firsthand just how passionate the community is out here, but there's no glue holding it together. That glue should be the Avalanche front office and the marketing campaign reaching out to us.
That's one of the things that you see in DC, especially when you go there, is and you see all the bloggers and like there isn't, like, the way that I see the you know, and this is coming from somebody who's had, you know, I've had my blog for 4 years, and it's been, you know, there have been times when I've taken a break from it because, well, you know, life gets in the way. I have to earn a living somehow, just like everybody.
You travel 300 days out of the year,
well,
dude.
It makes
that's
a little
like,
tough. That's but, amazing. You have time at all to do
I know.
It.
No, trust me, there's times when I look at it and I go, oh my God, I can't believe I've written in, you know, a month. And it's just, yeah. But regardless, you know, like you go to DC and you see all these people that have, you know, many of them with their own entities. Well, many of them have started their own, started out on Blogspot just like I did, mm-hmm. and, you know, kind of moved over their own thing or whatnot. And, or some that are still on Blogspot and they're, but they're a community and much more of a community than the Avalanche bloggers, mm-hmm. podcasters, stuff like that. I mean, well, podcasters, I think there's Jay and I, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah,
and now
it.
I'm part of Jay's thing. So, you know, it's, so it's, you know, the podcasters are a community of two.
I did him, a but. Podcast for a year, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I mean,
but there's so many, like, there's so many camps that kind of want their own thing without really meshing at all. I mean, you, Angelique, you are on Mile High Hockey.
Yes.
And you have your own thing. So you're a little different on that. You know, you kind of bridge both worlds.
Yeah. I started my blog about 4 years ago, and then I was approached to do Mile High Hockey a little over a year ago. And really, and that's a fun side. I mean, I get a good laugh at reading all the comments and everything. But yeah, it was a situation where, you know, I could get more exposure for my work.
Mm-hmm.
And I have received more exposure from my work, and then now it's generated into working for an all-female hockey blog, which I think is a great idea.
Yeah.
And so, and I'm
you know, there was one before, right?
Yeah,
the
heard.
H-Log.
Yes, I heard.
Hockey Ladies of Greatness. It's true. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It was almost four years old, and it sputtered, unfortunately. You know, a lot of people just kind of go back to their own, you know, their own area, and their own blogs. So yeah.
But I think Courtney, who's really running the show, she's really doing some great work getting us recognized and getting some writers, and we'll see how it goes. But I always going to have my base, which is my blog, which, you know, you joked about the Blogspot, but I'm actually just thinking about moving, looking at Squarespace, looking at WordPress, but that's another story.
Go with WordPress. That's all I can ever say.
WordPress is
always do WordPress.
Okay. All right.
But that's interesting that you bring up. Like, you, for us in Colorado, we have to be able to play both sides, you know, like, you need to be as flexible as you possibly can and work really hard to find those outlets. And that's what it takes for Avalanche fans in other states to get that coverage, because mm-hmm. there is only that one voice. And Mile High Hockey has a huge voice in the Avalanche community, but only a few of them actually live in Colorado.
Two.
Right.
Two
so
of
that
us.
Makes
you
it.
And, you and who else? Oh, Dario?
No. Well, Dario doesn't really. No, he's right for them. But it's, oh God, the name is. Uh-huh.
The
BG. Well, she doesn't, not an official writer, but okay. She did all the, they posted all her
training camp
and rookie camp stuff. But yeah, it's me, and I'm the name is escaping me, and he's going to probably hate me. But
that's okay. Because Mike
cool
is in Oklahoma City, and
well, yeah, it's Mike, and yeah,
he's Oklahoma City.
Yeah, Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, a perfect example is the after
and he's
hour.
A goalie also, by the way.
Yeah.
If you didn't know. I figured.
Well, I tried to get him out for the after hours game we're playing in October, and that's an example of what needs to happen on a more continual basis. Like this podcast, this should happen once a month if we can do it.
That'd be cool.
Because that's how you generate interest, and that's how you get people listening and coming back for the same thing over and over again. That's how you develop readers, and that's how you develop fans. And so my whole idea with the after hours game between the Avs Guild and Mile High Hockey is, you know, when I approached the Avalanche and said, hey, we're going to do an after hours game between two big Avs websites, they were like, we would love for you to do that, because it's interactive. And that's the same thing with the podcast. It's interactive. Like, fans are interacting with each other, and they're communicating, and they're bringing up topics that you can't cover with just one person.
Yeah.
And so the more that you write, Jory, the more that you write on two or three different websites,
right.
it's going to bring more fans to your Avalanche, you know, prospects website.
Right.
And that might build one or two new fans.
Yes,
so
exactly.
You have to be super flexible if you live in Colorado. And I know you were talking about it's really hard to make a name for yourself, but, you know, if you have the time to commit to it and you can be super flexible. I mean, I have four websites, and I cover the Avs on Mile High Sports Radio, and I do the KBPI thing. Like, I put myself out there in as many places as possible. And a lot of that is just being very fortunate and being very lucky, but that's what it takes to create a buzz in the Avalanche community, because otherwise there's only one place to get it, and that's Big Red.
Yeah.
And that's really tough. That's his nickname from now on. I'm sorry. Like, Big Red is just perfect. I used to drink that soda all the time in Texas, and I haven't had it in like 6 years.
And you're drinking the soda now. Because you own that, because there's nothing else in the vending machine, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But I think it's very tough for the Avalanche fans, and there's a high level of frustration, like you said, because you go to the games, you spend very good money, yes, and you're not being, you know, you're not being engaged. You just go and you watch, and no fans are getting into it. And I was very impressed when I saw the wave a few times last season.
Oh my
because
God.
Yo, I'm that surprised that there was enough fans to make it happen and go around the arena a few times. But
oh, we got one like four, six times around. It was a good one.
I think Twitter hits the fail whale as soon as there's a wave at any game because people are like, oh, I hate the wave. I hate seeing the wave. Why do people do the wave?
It's like, not just Justin geez. Bieber?
Okay. Oh, my God. Yeah, exactly. It's the Bieber
hate.
Get
that in there.
I think it's the guy that starts the wave. Once it goes, everyone's suckered in, but the guy is like, come on, people, one, two, three. Like,
and no one's
he,
into
and he
it.
Gets, he gets two people into it, you know? Yeah. It's his mom and dad. And like,
and then everybody else just goes, oh, I feel so sorry. This guy's going to just keep doing it until we yeah, actually do the wave. And yeah, I don't mind the wave.
Couldn't we do better things at the game than the wave?
Well,
like, I mean, we're the Avalanche. Like, shouldn't we have our own thing?
You mean like after the very first goal against, then they'll play Metallica's Reload like they have every year for years now?
Instead of doing the wave and going around, we should go from upper to lower like an actual Avalanche.
Yeah, or how about make some creative chants like they do in Nashville?
Yeah.
Like that Nashville, right. The section of Nashville fans was like 303.
Oh, yeah.
That has those real creative chants.
Mm-hmm. Well, as soon as Shattenkirk scores his first goal,
he just got Shat on.
You got Shat on.
There you go.
I'm hoping that migrates from BU.
That's better than at DU Ryan Dingle scores and then Dingleberries at.
Oh, no.
Interesting. But even now, as we're talking the last 5 minutes, and we discuss these things, they become like a little buzzwords, and maybe one or two fans that listen to this actually find it funny, and
well,
they
talk
to other
fans. Well, you have to think that like the Avalanche would talk about this stuff themselves. I mean, I'm sure that it's easy. You know, it's very easy to coast these days. You know, it was easy to coast before the lockout, and you know, so how is it that this doesn't get discussed, or you know, that nothing changes in these things?
I think part of it is ownership. Mm-hmm.
You know, I would argue the best thing that could happen to the Avalanche right now is if Melo does leave town, because then they're not the hottest deal in town anymore.
Exactly. Well, and then it'll be the Broncos, Tebow and the Broncos.
Or the Rockies, well, it's always going to be a Bronco town. Even
yeah,
if Melo goes,
you can't compete
Broncos,
with the
Broncos.
But I mean, in terms of the Kroenke Sports organization,
right.
Oh, yeah.
Once Melo leaves town, then the Nuggets are in rebuilding again.
It'll be like in the 90s.
And the Avs have the up-and-coming youth. They have the talent coming up, so it's they're the hot ticket at the can now. You know,
but the problem with that is we don't know what Josh's role actually is. Is he just the puppet, or is he the man? Or is it still Stan from, you know, calling the shots from his St. Louis box?
From the lair.
Yeah, you know, and that's the issue. Mm-hmm. Until the fans know, you know, and then maybe the players know and the organizations know, how are we going to know?
I think it's going to be hands-off for the Avs. I think Josh is going to be totally involved with the Nuggets, but I think with the Avs, it's just, here, Pierre, here are the keys.
Yeah.
Well, how could he not? He played basketball.
Exactly.
Himself,
it's
so,
like his dad.
You know, that's his
basketball
baby.
Is their sport. Mm-hmm. That's their sport. So I think it's going to be hands-off with the Avs. Pierre, as long as you're there, Pierre, you run the show. I that's what I think.
That's not really what Avalanche fans want to hear,
no,
but I agree with you.
Yeah, it's funny because it used to be, of course, you know, much like with the Devils, it was in Pierre We Trust when he was, you know, pretty much making the deals.
Yeah.
And then he went to president, stopped making the deals, you know, but still kind of has hand in there and guided the organization. But still, it's not exactly a fan-friendly, which seems ridiculous. This should be a fan-friendly team. There really isn't any reason it shouldn't be. They own every part of the organization. They own the television network. They own pretty much own their own radio at this point. Most of their radio coverage is pretty much, you know, coming from them, right?
Well, the thing that's interesting about the Avs radio coverage is, you know, again, I've been very fortunate to have the opportunity to work my way from just doing a podcast on Mile High Sports Radio to them actually hiring me and bringing me on. And the biggest thing with Mile High Sports Radio is a lot of fans, when they found out that the Avs switched to AM 1510, they turned on the station, they couldn't get the signal, and they're like, what the heck is this? This is terrible. Well, no one realized that Mile High Sports Radio, when they got the gig from the Avalanche, they had only been on the air for like 6 months. And it takes years to build up a solid station with a solid signal, and the FCC has to approve any signal boosts, and it's a six-month process for that. And I am actually very – and this is why I'm on the station and agree to do it for very little money, is because the station has done an amazing job with the little signal that they've had, the little money that they've had, and the little support that they've had. And that's why the Avalanche re-signed a deal, and that's why you've seen this awesome, very unique new three-way partnership with the fan. And before, you know, you would never have a Lincoln Financial station, you know, partnering with another station. But because Mile High Sports Radio is really unique and they have an awesome monthly magazine,
I subscribe.
You know, they're really thinking outside the box, and they're really being the radio station that steps outside the box and, you know, brings this opportunity for Avalanche fans. And now, look at 2 years later, they have an FM signal and an AM signal.
Yeah.
They signed a new 3-year deal with the Avalanche, and now they're partners with the fan. So, you know, Avalanche fans should recognize that it is not easy to develop new modes of communication in Colorado because there's not a huge fan base and because the Avs struggle to sell tickets. So as you can tell, like, there's other markets that are very fortunate. They're in Canada. They never have to worry about selling a ticket. They can have high ticket prices. The Avalanche have a certain standard, and that's just the way they are.
Yeah.
You know, they're not from Colorado originally. This whole franchise moved from Quebec, and they have very high standards and very loyal and rich tradition.
Well, a big difference also in with the Canadian teams is that you don't have the local sports fan like you do here. You know, you know, James, you know, Rockies, Broncos, Nuggets, Avs, on and on and on. Yeah. We're a saturated sports market. And up there, what do you have? You have your hockey and you have your
Canadian
CFL
football.
Best football ever. I love the CFL.
18 league, I guess, with only
18
3 downs.
League, 3 downs, 110 yards. In yards, not meters. Yards.
That's right.
Yeah.
110 yards.
But the big thing is you have to dig in the trenches before you win a war. And I think a lot of the stations and a lot of the coverage in Colorado, the trench work has been done. Mm-hmm. And now I think you'll start to see in the next 2 years, you know, all of us having better opportunities and reaching more people and, you know, the Avs getting better coverage in more cities with bigger radio stations. It's all slowly starting. It just doesn't happen overnight. Yeah. And so the Avalanche fan, you know, it's both sides. Like, the Avs could definitely be doing so much more, but at the same time, they're restricted by certain things, and it really comes down to the Avalanche fan being a little bit patient and being a little bit more open to the fact that, hey, the Avs run their organization a certain way, and they're slowly starting to change. And if you just come out and support, you know, maybe one or two more games than you usually do, it could make a big difference.
Yeah.
And there's good deals out there. I mean, there's a real big stigma out there that Avalanche games are impossible to go to because they're so expensive. And the avalancheguild.com is proof that you can get tickets at a good discount and make it to a game.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is, you know, I don't have the money to really spend on marketing and getting the word out there, but the fans have to talk to each other, and we have to be communicating with each other and doing things like this to really spread the word.
You're right.
So it all really just comes back to being interactive and you putting the time into it. And James, you're putting the money into going to the games, and all you guys are doing what you're doing to really raise the awareness on the sport and on the game. And it'll all happen soon.
Well, it's funny, the interactive part, like Mark Mosier at Avalanche
awesome.
Radio.
Yeah.
He was talking he came up and found you. Have you guys actually met before, Angelique?
We met last training camp.
Okay, and I hadn't met him before, finally, and he's actually getting out with the fans.
Yes.
Jay Veen, from Avs Hockey Podcast, went and played golf with him twice now.
Yes.
And actually whipped his butt, from what I understand, this last time.
Yeah, you heard the story today. Actually, I'm the one who really encouraged him to get on Twitter.
Oh, yeah?
We talked about this time last year, and he was talking about how altitude was going to because both the Avs and the Nuggets broadcasters are on Twitter now, yep. and I really encourage them to say, yes, do it. You guys should do it. Get out, talk to the fans.
Well, and Mosier got on, and then Mike Haynes got on.
Yeah, Mike Haynes got on, right.
And I want to see McNabb on there.
And Mosier's great on there, too.
Oh, Mosier's awesome.
He interacts with everybody, and he posts relevant information.
He doesn't block you.
Nice. Yeah. He doesn't block you.
Well, okay, let's have the Twitter talk here for a moment, because everybody here is on Twitter. And, you know, I mean, I'm just looking at my Twitter stats right now, 13,000 tweets, and I'm still not sure about this whole Twitter. And you know what, and the thing is, that's honest. I mean, I really am not. I look at it, and I sometimes go, man, this just... The conversation here is really lacking sometimes.
You mean on Twitter?
Yeah, in general. For the Avalanche, in general.
Okay.
As part of the medium, and maybe some of that's just me. Maybe it's not. I'm not sure. What do you? You know,
if it was not for Twitter, my Goalie Guild website would not have nearly the kind of community it does. Mm-hmm. And to me, Twitter opens up doors because you can connect with anyone anywhere in the world at any given time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was very fortunate again to meet Kevin Weeks last year, and he was on Twitter, and I found him, and, you know, I always loved him when he was in the NHL. He always worked very hard, and, you know, with the Carolina Hurricanes, he made it all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals, and it was a great story, and he's on NHL Network, and he's an amazing commentator.
Oh, yeah.
And he's on excellent. Twitter now. And for me to be able to interact with him, even if it's 140 characters, just saying, "Hey, Kevin Weeks, you're awesome, dude," and for him to tweet me back and say, "Hey,
yes,
saw your website, it's great, awesome," I'm blown away like that. Like I hardly, you know, anytime I get a chance to interact with an NHL goaltender, I'm very fortunate. And I love that opportunity, and so we build on that. And 6 months later, you know, CBC comes and covers a game in Colorado and I get an opportunity to meet him in the press box. That's a once in a lifetime opportunity that only stemmed because of Twitter. Yeah. So I think it's just a matter of how you use the medium and what your goals are and what you're putting out there for other people to read.
James, you're almost exclusively on Twitter pretty much now, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've got a Facebook, but it's, you know, Twitter is really the medium that I like to go to. And I actually talked to more Avalanche fans who are out of the state than in the state.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, the friends that are my actual friends, I mean, they can't stand what I have to say because it's about hockey. I mean, that's all I want to talk about. And, you know, they're talking about doing rails and other things with their websites, and I have no idea what the hell it is. But I love being...
At first, I thought that was a drug reference, different. And then, it's Ruby on Rails.
But
gotcha.
I love being able to connect with, like, the Avalanche fan in Canada and the Avalanche fan who had to move away because, you know, he's an Army brat. And mm-hmm. get a talk about small things, you know, that one memory of that one game. It's great. It keeps us all together, and mm-hmm. that's what Twitter does. It's gives you the opportunity to be in any community that you want to be in at anywhere in the world. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Even if you've got nothing to say, you don't have to say anything, but you can listen to other people. Like I listen to you guys and I learn more about the game and the players and the stats and all the stuff that I need to learn now, I get it from people like you. So
I would say between Twitter and Facebook, that's probably how we started building our audience at the Burgundy Blog, because we're young. You know, we haven't even been a year yet. It'll be a year in October when we hit that milestone. But I can't imagine, you know, I do things like I comment on other blogs. I read what everybody writes, almost every article they write, you know, and I comment and I interact, but the interaction would be so much harder without Twitter and Facebook,
yes.
because I can tweet a link out. I have it set up automatically to tweet when we post something.
Yeah, me too.
And then people read and they comment. And if that wasn't around, aside from reading and commenting on other blogs, it would just be word of mouth, and it would be so much harder to build our audience that way.
Ryan, if it wasn't for Twitter, you wouldn't have your gig with the fourth period.
It wouldn't.
That's
because
true.
Lenny came to me and asked me if I want to cover it. I was like, I'm way too busy, but hey, Ryan is really knowledgeable. You should talk to him. And so that all happened through Twitter. So again, it's who you communicate with and who you connect with, and if you use it in a professional manner. And that's not to mean that you can't be a fan and, you know, do a little trash talking or talk back a little bit to people that you don't like, or guys who cover the Avalanche that quit and then come back.
Nobody does that. Well, nobody does that.
Well, Twitter's how we all got together here.
For exactly.
See, now, and Twitter, truthfully, Twitter, I wouldn't have met most of you.
Right.
Angelique, I would have, you know, but I would have met you guys without Twitter. But at the same time, for me, it's like, it's too easy to just delve into stupid minutiae.
Right.
True.
Too easy to get into stupid arguments without tone. Too easy to make mistakes on. You at reply to the wrong person, or you do a direct message and, oh, shit, that was public. And, oh, right. And I have to bleep that. Hang on. Let me write down the time of that one.
That's funny.
Well, didn't I tell you guys that I wasn't really I didn't like to swear on this
that's
thing?
That's all right. It's, somebody had to you have to be really careful, and that's you have to know.
See, exactly. Look how easy it is to screw up.
Yeah. To be professional. And you're talking about connections. That's how I connected with Courtney to do the all-female blog with all-female writers. And that's how we connected was Twitter. So I have a Facebook. I'm on there maybe 5 minutes every other day. I'm not on there a lot. Twitter, I'm on there all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Twitter is great for me for the Goalie Guild because – as an aspiring goalie scout, being able to put scouting notes out there during any game or the Olympics, for example, or even these prospect tournaments that aren't televised, but I have an opportunity to watch it on a webcast, and guys want to know how prospects are doing because they don't get to see them very often. They get to see them maybe for 2 preseason games a whole season.
Yep.
So you can really develop a great reputation and really build yourself into, you know, a very professional sports analyst or hockey analyst by using Twitter if you use it effectively. Mm-hmm. And you have a reputation on there. Like, people come to me every day asking me, what goalie should I draft for my fantasy league? Or when is your next school block article going up? And, you know, it has really helped me establish myself as an aspiring pro goalie scout. And, you know, I don't have any pro goaltending experience. I played ACHA Division II for CSU for 2 years. So I am really up against it when it comes to aspiring to be what I want to be. But if you build a reputation and you have enough people coming to you on a daily basis using Twitter, for example, sooner or later you'll get there. And so if you're really consistent with it and you believe in it, you'll get great followers, you'll have a good reputation, and you'll really benefit a lot of people and enhance your own experience and your own reputation. And that's, you know, it's done wonders for me. And, you know, it takes time. I've been on for 1.5 years. You know, but it's really helped me out a lot. And so I think it's just how you use it. And you brought up a great point. Like, you cannot dictate tone from a tweet, just like you can't dictate tone from an email. So you just have to be super careful. And, like, I only have my Goalie Guild account, but I keep most of my personal stuff off of there because I have a certain reputation. People expect me to tweet just about goalies.
Yeah.
Right.
And while goaltending is definitely my life, it's not all I do. You know, I have other tastes, I have other, you know, passions and stuff like that, but that feed is specifically for goaltending, and that's what people want to see, and that's what I give to them.
Yeah.
And so
I've been kind of thinking about wanting to have just a separate, I mean, when I first actually started my Twitter account, it was strictly for my blog.
Right.
And it sort of, you know, just sprouted out from there. And now I'm afraid if I made another account just for my blog, you know, how am I going to get all the people following me now to go
yeah,
there?
Yeah.
And so that's why, you know, I fiddle with that idea.
But I mean,
but
as long as
your blog is for also, though, right?
I mean, yes.
You know.
As long as you're consistent.
Right.
Like, you know, when I first started Twitter, I still had some of those personal tweets in there. And
right.
I'd interact with my girlfriend at the time because she was on Twitter. And it was fun. And people understand that and people expect it. So it's just about building up a reputation and being consistent and then following through with those expectations. It's guys like Dan Ellis who have a certain, you know, when people follow a pro athlete on Twitter, they want to know the personal stuff, but they also want to know some insight on the position that they play or the sport that they play. It's when you interact with fans so much that you get so tied into it that you say one thing that gets completely blown out of proportion and your whole reputation is changed.
I don't think that was blown out of proportion at all, actually. Dan Ellis talked about the money. You don't talk about the money, no matter what.
If
in your job, you don't talk about the money.
Right, right.
And he's talking about, not only is he talking about the money to the fans, but and whatever his feeling about the money is, he's talking about the money to the fans in a sport that has salary cap implications.
Yeah.
He's also talking about union business.
Yeah.
If he doesn't like the escrow, he should be going to the NHLPA and talking about it there, not to the fans.
Right.
It's the wrong place to do it.
And that's the thing, is he crossed that boundary. That's not an expectation that fans have. They don't want to read about that stuff because this is the worst economy. Well,
it was
even
beyond that. It was a professional. It was a professional mistake too.
Yeah,
it's like, it's not, you know, you just don't.
He's a pro athlete, yeah, and he's making a lot of money, and he should have had a little bit more, you know, wherewithal to know not to say those certain things. This is the worst economy this country's seen in many years.
Mm-hmm.
You don't bring up something like that. That was a slip.
That was a huge slip. Well, and then he became indignant about it when people called it on him.
Right.
That's, you know.
Right. And so that's the thing, is he's got to stick to hockey.
And actually, one good thing about Twitter, you know, go follow fake Dan Ellis for some of the funniest. I got lost in my arboretum. Which is brilliant.
You know, I started on Twitter individually before I started the blog, and I had a good understanding of how Twitter works. So as soon as we started the Burgundy blog, I was like, we have to have our own Twitter account for that.
Yeah.
So on my account, and I don't care if people follow it or not, but I'll talk about whatever I want and post pictures of whatever I want. I'll talk about movies and music. I'll also talk about the Avalanche. But I try to keep the Burgundy blog related to blogging and the Avalanche and hockey in general.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to see me, mm-hmm, you know, griping about work or something on the Burgundy blog. I'll do that on my private.
Yeah, see, that's the problem. I put everything on just that one Twitter account.
Well, and it's hard. Like you said, you don't want to lose what you have. Yeah. So you may have to keep that one as your blog one and start an individual one.
I might have to
consider. See, I'll talk about anything but money. I don't want to talk about money.
Money or religion.
Money or religion. Nope. I actually got into politics the other day, and that was a mistake.
Politics, yes.
That was dangerous.
Oh, I hate that. Yeah. I don't even like politics, so, you know. But
I can talk about politics of hockey.
I could.
That's about it.
I could introduce you to some people who like to talk about politics. Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, yeah. I've got some of my friends from school are political wonks, and man, they can just go on forever.
It's ugly.
I can't stand it personally.
Luckily, they don't do it on Twitter. So
yeah, right.
So we should probably start wrapping this up. I guess my last question then, you know, I like to kind of wrap it back around to the Avalanche and, you know, stuff like that. I know it's early. It's so early we haven't played a single game. But kind of where do you see the Avalanche at the end of the year? Not even standings. You know, are they going to be third? Are they going to be fifth? Blah 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 blah. But you know, maybe playoffs. Are you hopeful? Are you, you know, let's start, Angelique. I mean, are you, how are you feeling about this season at this point?
Honestly, it's a great unknown to me because it's such a young team. You worry that some of these kids are going to slump, sophomore slump, quote unquote. And so that's sort of my concern. I'm really thinking about guys like Stewart. I'm thinking about Peter Mueller. Was that just a, you know, flash in the pan, that 15 games, or is this guy really going to turn it around after being traded from Phoenix? And then also, we're going to see this change this slowly this year, but more into next year, the defense getting younger, all these younger defensemen coming up. And on that transition, it's going to take a little time, and maybe there'll be a little bit of a struggle, but I think it's going to be worth the wait. So maybe they don't make the playoffs this year, but I think it'll benefit them 2-3 years down the road.
Okay. Jonathan?
I'm optimistic. Mm-hmm. I think that they have the opportunity to be a much better team than they were at the end of last season. But again, there are some unknowns. I mean, Stewart had an amazing season last season, and, you know, his first, you know, few games he really didn't do anything, but then he got called back up and then he just turned it on and was just a beast basically for the rest of the season. Can he do that again?
Mm-hmm.
Same with Mueller, you know, were those 15 games just a fluke or is he going to be able to keep doing it? But I think, you know, it's a young team and I think the more experience they have, then the better that's going to be. So I think they make the playoffs, but, you know, who knows?
Okay.
You know, you never know with injuries or whatever, you know, things can happen, but I'm optimistic.
Ryan?
I tend to shy away from predictions. Just, I feel like the NHL is one of the hardest sports to predict,
mm-hmm,
just because there's so much going on.
Well, let me ask you this. Where are the Florida Panthers going to be next year?
The Florida Panthers, yeah.
Exactly. That's so a good point. What do you think? what do you think about the Avs?
You got me there.
Sorry.
I would like to build. I would say that they're going to build upon what we accomplished last season and probably do a little better, unless there is a sophomore slump kind of situation going on. A lot of guys are, you know, we have a lot of young guys who will be in their second year, but we also have people who should be coming out of that now. So they could potentially turn it on. I'm worried about, like we said, Peter Mueller, Chris Stewart. They both have had ups and downs. I hope Mueller wasn't playing for a contract in those 15 games because, you know, it kind of begs the question. He just turned it on all of a sudden when he came to us, but it could be because of the new system.
Change
of
scenery. Yeah, it can mean a lot.
But I think
who knows
a lot...
what happened under Wayne Gretzky.
Well, yeah, you know, exactly.
He wasn't exactly a stellar coach. So,
yeah. But a lot is riding on the injury factor. I think more and more injuries happen each season and across all sports anymore. But with the depth that we had last year compared to the depth that we have this year, there's going to be a lot of new guys coming up to fill in those roles as people come and go out of the lineup. So depending on how they accomplish it, we're either going to do better or worse. But I'd like to say I feel like we're going to build upon last season and maybe make it to the second round, mm-hmm. you know, and exit out. I don't see us going all the way.
Yeah.
And that could change, you know. But I think we'll do pretty well.
Right. Justin?
I think this season really depends on how the Avalanche start. And last season, the Avalanche came out those first two home games, blew everyone away, surprised everyone. And because they had such a strong October, they had just enough fuel in the tank to make it to the playoffs. And the expectations are higher. They're not going to surprise anyone with their speed or their goaltending or anything like that. Teams know how to play the Avalanche now. So it's going to be very tough to make it back to the playoffs. But if Craig Anderson can have the same kind of impact that he had last season and come out and really have another strong October, they should have just enough fuel in the tank to once again make it to the playoffs. And, you know, injuries happen all the time. You can never, you know, plan for that sort of thing. But like you said, Ryan, someone will fill the role and someone will step up. It happens with every hockey team every single season. But I think, you know, from my experience watching hockey for all these years, the start is always the biggest key because it sets the tone for how the season goes. And you saw it last season with the Avs. I mean, Craig Anderson set the tone
for
this Avalanche
team. So a lot of teams last year.
Exactly. Yeah.
Other than the Canucks, because they started out pretty soft and
yeah.
wound up picking it back up.
But, yeah. I mean, your goaltender is your most important player, and Craig Anderson is the key to this team. And he's in a contract season, so I think he'll be motivated. But the bar is set very high, and it's not going to be one of those seasons where the Avs just come out and fly past everyone. Because now, you know, they're basically the same exact team, but they're not going to surprise anyone. So that's going to be a real big obstacle. But again, you know, they're going to be fighting for a playoff spot. They'll be right around 8th, 9th, 10th, and hopefully they have enough gas to make it in.
Yeah. And you know what? You saying that goaltenders are the most important position is like me saying that podcasting is the most important thing on the internet.
You got to believe it. We should get Zach in for this one because he's got good insight too.
Zach, do you want to pop in for a second?
He's been sitting here the whole time.
Been sitting here listening.
You know, I'm pretty optimistic too about how I think the Avs will do this year. I think like Justin said, a lot of it's going to depend on how they start the season. You know, last year they had a great October, and I think a lot of it this year is going to be goaltending. Nobody really knows for sure if the Avalanche are going to expect Craig Anderson to play 71 games like he did last year. But, you know, like we all saw on the Avalanche website, Craig Anderson has said, you know, hey, I want to play. I want to be the guy in the net, you know.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he doesn't have a problem with playing all those games. But I'm really excited just being at camp today. So much depth, especially in the goaltending position. I mean, I'm just amazed at how much depth there is this organization, and I'm excited.
Once
for
you
the
get to John Grant, you know,
so.
Awesome.
Oh, please no,
James.
I'm actually pretty enthusiastic about this season. I'm not going to put any pressure on the players, but instead on the coaching staff. The Avalanche were one of the worst teams with allowing shots on goal. One of the worst teams with getting shots on goal. Spinning it around, we had one of the best records of most shots allowed, fewest shots taken, and we were winning games. But We need to improve on penalty power play. We need to improve on penalty kill. The defense has got to play bigger and tougher and meaner in front of Anderson. He can't be making 40, 50 saves every freaking game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you whittle that down to 30, hey, I'd put my money on Andy anytime. But Sacco, you know, what is he going to show me this year? Was last year a fluke? Was it just he got lucky, or does he have the talent and the genius to take this team with the talent that we have and push them further than they think that they can go? I'm not going to put us at an eighth or ninth or tenth place. I'm going to put us at a fifth or fourth place because I think you can't say, oh, well, the Canucks are better, and screw that. Like, we're the Avalanche. We're the best team out there, and let's show everybody.
Every Avalanche fan should be like you, man.
Yeah.
Seriously.
That's how we have to be.
No, like that's you. Right. I think you're exactly right. Like, we all talk about goaltending or, you know, expectations and you know, injuries and all that thing, but the system is the biggest thing. Like, the players mold to what the coach puts out there, so the players are going to do their thing. We all know what we're going to get from all the key guys, but what does the coaching staff have in store? Like, they have to improve the specialty teams, and you're absolutely right with that.
I still wonder, though, in the back of my head, if that Sacco's just warming the seat for Patrick Waugh. I'm just putting it out there.
You never know, his son's a singer now, so I guess he's not worried about his son making it to the NHL.
I still think that's in the back of my head because Lacroix.
You never know.
You know.
I don't know. I think that the nostalgic trip that they had a couple of years ago kind of maybe made them say, well, maybe we should just look towards new things for now rather
they
than
should,
going
they
back
should.
To the well
and
over
look
and
at
over.
Steve Yzerman in Tampa Bay, like his first day as a general manager, already one of the best general managers in the league. Yeah. Joe Sakic, he'd be one of the best general managers the first day he stepped into office as well. And he wants to be a part of the organization. And there's, you know, that's the best thing for the you want to talk about getting the fan base rejuvenated and that sort of thing. Put Sakic in a management role and good things will happen.
The sorry to get back to football.
That's
all right. But the Broncos bring an Elway in. That's and right there.
Well, he could sell some cars.
But you got to be careful like that. Like we said, Wayne Gretzky didn't pan out to be the coach that everybody thought
he
would.
Right.
But it's also, you know, he has such natural talent. How do you teach that?
I think I've actually brought this up on the podcast before, but I'm going to bring it up to you guys that one of the interesting theories that I heard about Gretzky and why things did not work out so well, partially, you know, I mean, I'm sure that some of it was ability, but also that when you have a team come in to play against the Coyotes, all the players are looking across the bench and going, "Oh my God, that's just that, you know,
right.
That's Wayne Gretzky. I'm going to step up my A game."
Yeah.
And they could do that for one game.
Yeah.
You know, or four games a year or whatever.
Right.
But you got guys trying to, you know, guys can't do that for 82 games. And, you know, so everybody else is trying to take their game up just a little bit more to impress Gretzky.
Yeah.
And the other guy's like, you know, here we go again. So,
yeah. That's interesting.
It was a theory that I was told and I thought it was kind of interesting.
Nice.
So, you know,
well, it's about appeal too. Like, who wouldn't want to play in a Sakic system or who wouldn't want to go to Tampa Bay and play with Yzerman's system now? So it's the appeal. Like, Gretzky, I think, I'm not sure if Roenick was part of the Coyote system when Gretzky was part owner or not, but, you know, that sort of dynamic makes a difference. Yeah. Like, you know, Mike Modano going to Detroit, whoever would have thought in a million years you'd see Modano finishing his career in a Red Wings uniform.
Wasn't Roenick with the Coyotes when he was benched and then he went across the street to the bar?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I think it was with the Coyotes, but I know it was Roenick who he was benched for a game, you know, and so he left the stadium and went across the street and had a bar or went had a beer or two during the game.
Sounds like Roenick.
The bar. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Roenick's like, on Twitter now too. So
yeah, I heard about
oh boy,
Biz Nasty. You know, you always got to throw Biz Nasty, Paul Bissonnette out there when you're talking about Twitter. I mean.
So I wonder if Hobby Bullen was taking notes from Jeremy Roenick. There
I think he was hoping more for the Chris Chelios. Oh, that's okay. We'll let it go this time. Not so much. Yeah. So.
But it sounds like most of us here are pretty optimistic, or at least cautiously optimistic.
Yeah. I'm cautiously optimistic.
I'm more in that group.
I'm kind of in the a couple of years ago, the first time they missed the playoffs, they missed by you know, 1 point, basically three, because you know the last game really
Peter
didn't count.
Forsberg.
Peter Budaj for you know keeping him in it.
Yeah,
you know, I mean
Peter Forsberg had what like the game
three
winning
assists
goal,
and a goal
against Nashville, and that was the game that knocked us out of the playoffs.
And we were cheering him the whole time.
Yeah.
I was at that game. Yeah. Everyone was cheering for Forsberg. Yeah.
And speaking of letting things go, Avs fans, let the Forsberg thing go.
Oh, my gosh. Please. Yes. If I see one more article about Forsberg possibly coming back.
Talking about Big Red. Stop posting articles about Peter Forsberg.
No more Forsberg, please.
I'm going to go in the opposite direction. He's coming back.
You had to stick that in there, didn't you?
No.
I don't think anybody's mentioned Kovalchuk either, so we got to get one of those.
Throw that in there.
Oh. As a Mile High Hockey reader, just the amount of complaints about them not signing him. I was never on that bandwagon.
I never heard any Avalanche fans say, oh, man, I can't believe we didn't sign him after they saw what the contract was.
Yeah.
Nope.
I mean,
there were a couple, but they were, novice.
Simone Gagné, on the other hand, he went for... His Wikipedia entry said he went for a bag of pucks and some soggy french fries.
That's totally a hockey fan doing something like that. So sarcastic. I love it. I think the biggest thing is the chemistry in the locker room is awesome. And when you have a leader like Adam Foote who's gritty, who's mean, who's tough, it seeps into everyone else. And when you have Hajduk in the lineup too, there's still a good balance of veteran leadership and youth. And a couple of new guys will step up, and I think that's going to be the most exciting thing. Yeah. Is it Shattenkirk? Is it
that's going to be fun finding out who that is.
Yeah, I think he's going to be back in the minors for a year, but I think he could use it.
I'm not going to totally disagree, but that's another story.
No, I like him. I mean, I like Shattenkirk, but,
he's going to be a pro defenseman soon.
It may take more time than I had originally thought.
He's not going to be, he's not going to be like, Duchesne stepping right in, but at the same time, Duchesne made a lot of mistakes off the bat. And, what did I see out there today with Duchesne? He wasn't trying to split the defense on his own all the time. He was, which was exactly what he did the first 10, 15 games.
Learning. It's the same thing you'll see with Calvin Pickard. Everyone will be saying, or most fans will be saying, why do we draft this kid so high? He looked terrible out there. It's an adjustment to speed. It's all about experience. Once you've been through a pro camp and once you've been in the pro ranks for a season, the next year is always 10 times better. Oh, yeah. But at the same time, there's different things you have to watch out for. Now players know what they're going up against. A lot of goalies in the NHL, Jimmy Howard, Tuukka Rask, Yaroslav Halak, they're all going to be, the book's out on them. And the same thing, like I said, talking about the prediction, like the book is out on the Avalanche. They're not going to surprise anyone with their speed. So they've got to find a way, like James was saying, to improve that special teams. Because if they do not score power play goals, they're not going to make it to the playoffs.
If they can't kill an occasional penalty.
Right.
Yeah, and that's where somebody like maybe if there's a surprise like a Shattenkirk or a Cohen could help at least with the power play.
Right.
The penalty kill, we'll see.
Well, and that's why Mueller, I don't think he's going to struggle this season because he's such a key on the point on the power play. Like, he's going to get a lot of power play minutes. He's going to be open a lot of times. Yeah. Him and Lyles, like, if anyone benefited from the Mueller move more, it was Johnny Michael Lyles.
Yep.
And I agree. I think a lot of people, if there's two plays that I'll remember from last season, the first one was Matt Hendrick scoring that penalty shot or the shootout goal in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. And then John Michael Lyles throwing his body out there to keep that puck in the zone and then Mueller firing it. And that's what you want.
And then it was the next game when it was basically the opposite roles that with the same
and
outcome.
Both of those plays, what are they? It's effort. Yeah. You have to see the Avs put the effort out there. And if they have the effort and Anderson's going to be a fierce mofo again, there's no reason why the team can't make the playoffs again.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping so. I'm cautiously optimistic, but we'll see. Guys, thank you so much for doing this. Let me just throw it back around. Angelique?
Yes.
Colorado Avalanche prospects.blogspot.com
for now.
Wow, I thought Jerseys and Hockey Love was a long URL. You have it.
Well, for now, I'm thinking about making a move. So
do it.
If you need
a hand, let me know. I'll help you out.
I will definitely get in touch with you about that.
Chicks Who Give a Puck and writes for Mile High Hockey. You can find her on Twitter at Jory5280.
Yeah, Avs NDU for Chicks Who Give a Puck. So I'm looking forward to starting that new venture.
Awesome.
Yeah,
good.
Jonathan Gebhardt and Ryan Boulding, both from the Burgundy blog, theburgundyblog.com. And you can find them on Twitter at Burgundy Blog. And also, Ryan, you're going to be writing for the Fourth Period magazine. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've done not the magazine, the web.
Right on.
The web correspondent stuff. But I've done one article. It was an off-season report card. I gave the Avs an F.
I was like, what?
We'll go up from there.
We'll see if you make it. We'll see if you make it out the door. And thank you, Jonathan.
That's funny.
Justin Goldman. Mile High Sports Radio, and of course the Avs Guild, the Goalie Guild.
Yeah.
You can find you on Twitter in 100 different places, including at the Avs Guild. So.
And the Goalie Guild, yep.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate
no
it.
No problem, man.
And our host for the afternoon, James Kyle.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. JQ Colorado. And are you going to do are you going to basically kick back up your Avalanche based one?
Yeah,
again?
I will pick up my Avalanche one. It's Bleed Burgundy.
I bleed burgundy or just
no,
bleed?
No, just bleed burgundy.
Oh, bleed burgundy. Okay.
Good.
Awesome.
So,
yeah, great. So, thank you guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
No problem. Thanks a lot.
This was fun.
Thanks a lot for listening to The Rink. You can always find The Rink at www.rinkpodcast.com, where you can find links to everybody who was on the roundtable, as their blogs and their Twitter feeds. Please follow them and check them out. You can call The Rink at 845-704-RINK. It's 845-704-7465. The Rink Podcast is on Twitter at Rink Podcast, and you can email us at rink@rinkpodcast.com. Thanks a lot for listening to The Rink.